Yoga in all its forms has been a support for me in my life, through all the highs and lows. It's opened my mind and my heart in ways I never knew were possible. It has been a teacher, a taskmaster, and a friend. This podcast is an offering. I wish to share the teachings of yoga with you as a tool to help navigate life. Namaste, and welcome. Welcome. I'm so happy you're here. So a couple of episodes ago, we were talking about the book Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor E. Frankl. And in a recent group of meditation and like-minded beings that we hold on Zoom through the Om Tara Studio, we were talking about, reactivity. We were talking about activation. So sometimes we use the word triggers and the like. And his quote, Viktor E. Frankl's quote, came back up. And I've been chewing on it a little bit. Instead of just taking the words at face value, because it is a very well-known quote, and it feels, when I read it, and I've heard this from other people, like, yeah, that. Like, I really want to be able to live like that. And the quote is, between stimulus and response, there is a space. In that space is our power to choose our response. In our response lies our growth and our freedom. So, you know how you can hear something over and over again and you keep perceiving it the same way? It almost like it can dull in your senses a bit. I know we talk about this as yoga teachers very often, where you can give a cue, if you will, in a yoga class of, let's say, lengthen your sternum. And you can say that cue 100 times in a class with the same student over and over again. And on the 101st time that you say it and this student is present, two things will happen. Either one, you said it and you've been saying it all along, when they'll come to you, they'll be like, oh my gosh, that thing you said tonight about lengthening your sternum. Wow, like I'd never heard you say that before. Sometimes they come right out and say, you never said that before. But if they're really in mindful, then they go, I never heard you say that before. My point is, you have said it, but they weren't able to receive it. And often that will happen when you as the teacher have said something 100 times, lengthen your sternum. Then they'll take another class with another teacher, and that teacher will say the exact same cue in relationship to the exact same asana. And the student will report back to you, wow, I heard this thing for the first time when I took so-and-so's class. So that is very common human experience. Why do I riff on that? Because that's what happens with these quotes, you know, especially in the days of social media, where everybody is just so in touch with their wisest, most philosophical self, myself included. When we think, wow, wait till I post this quote, people are really going to think something about me. Woohoo. They have no idea how wise I am until they see me share this quote from someone else from a few hundred years ago. But I remember when I was first starting out as a teacher, as a yoga teacher, I guess this was back in 2005, my teacher, Bob Thurman, in a Buddhist retreat, he said something along the lines of, when you are privileged enough to be able to hear these teachings and study these teachings, you need to go out and share them. You need to find a way in which you can help to wake up people to these teachings. And one of the things he said, if you have a classroom, get a whiteboard and a marker and put a quote on the board. And I chuckle at that, because I did that for years in the yoga studio. I had a whiteboard and I had a marker, and I would have a different quote or a different yoga sutra or something from Eckhart Tolle, you know, whatever, every week for people to ponder while they were taking a yoga class. But now it's all over social media. So what happens is we have this quote: between stimulus and response, there is a space, and that space is our power to choose our response, and our response lies our growth and our freedom. That's how we usually read them. We don't read them as slow as I did the first time. We usually rush right through them, right? Because a lot of this stuff is being shared and regurgitated, as I said, on social media. And social media is a rapid platform most of the time, if not always. So when I said this quote, shared this quote with a group recently, I got stopped on that between stimulus and response in a way that I hadn't been paused before. And so, you know, thank you for allowing me to work this out with a microphone. So we understand what a stimulus is, right? The definition of a stimulus in psychology is anything that can trigger a physical or behavioral change. So I also think of Pavlov's experiment with the dogs and the salivation and their dinner and the bell. But a stimulus is anything that comes in, and it comes into your field of awareness. So it's not always something that comes into the room or someone that comes into the room or a room you enter, but it's also memory and so on. But it shifts, it makes a change, it triggers. That's the psychological definition, is that it can trigger a physical or behavioral change. So that's what a stimulus is. And then we're recognizing that the response is our reaction to the stimulus. Now, just to continue the clarity around the idea of a stimulus, it could be a memory. It could be a song, it could be a smell, it could be something someone said, it could be all of those things, an argument with someone, it could be a movie you watch that reminds you of something that triggers a physical or behavioral change. Okay, so I think people, myself included, tend to focus on that space that's in between stimulus and response. And I totally get that. And we have tools to deal with that, especially with the more and more awareness that's being brought mainstream to the understanding of the effects of trauma. We are learning different tools, as I said, to regulate ourselves after the stimulus, before the response. Okay, but here's where I'm focusing on. I'm focusing on stimulus. Because what struck me when I said it for the 100th time the other night was, well, wait a minute, that's the responsibility, isn't it? I can take a poll or ask 5 people or go into therapy and like to figure out what the space should feel like. You know, what do I do in the space before I respond? But what is most important, I think, is to start with the stimulus, because it's missing the arrival of the stimulus, the stimuli, I don't know, that we travel too far in our nervous system to catch that really beautiful space before the response. So follow me on this, right? So what we know is that the body is where we're storing, yes, we're storing it in memory, but we're also physically storing the things that have happened to us, the good, the bad, and the in-between. We're storing it in our body, we're storing it in our nervous system. And we find consciously and subconsciously, mostly subconsciously, unless you're doing the introspective work, then it becomes more conscious, but we find the coping skills to manage the stuck experiences that deregulate us, that are in our bodies. And then, as we talked about, and as beautifully presented in Michael Singer's Untethered Soul, we also create environments and relationships that support us staying regulated and not necessarily investigating the stuck stuff. Okay. So we understand, for example, if we are activated or triggered by a memory, let's say, we time travel in a memory. Whatever happened in our environment, and I don't need anything to happen. I have a very powerful mind, and sometimes that's a really awesome thing, and sometimes it's a major curse. But if I'm activated, if I'm triggered, one of the things that we know to try is counting or naming things in the room. So three things or five things, so desk, dog, laptop, pillow, chair, and that gets me back into the room. And then from there, check in with my breathing, which we don't want to do that too quickly because the breath is so directly affected by the trigger. Okay. And so then we can choose our response. But if I don't catch the stimulus, then I get too far into the trigger that I'm not able to choose what he says here. In that space is our power to choose our response, and our response lies our growth and our freedom. If I time travel too far, or if I get too caught up in the trigger and the stimulus, that thing that created a change in my physical or behavioral environment, then I can't choose my response. I just respond, or I just react. Okay, so that's why I think for me, having this little light bulb go off of, huh, this is all well and good, and I understand that I'm meant to find that pause, that space, so that I can have agency and choose my response, my reaction. But how do I recognize the stimulus? How do I recognize the activation before it overwhelms me? And I don't have an answer for that, except I do have some ways that have been proven to work. And big surprise here, it's yoga and meditation. Yoga asana, breath work, and meditation. And you can find study after study that is going to show you scientific benefits that have been proven to support yoga as a deregulation practice, as a practice that, done consistently, not one day a week, not one weekend retreat a year, but the yoga practice of asana and meditation and breath work done daily, regularly, consistently. You floss every day to keep the plaque from building up between your teeth. And we practice yoga every day so that the plaque doesn't build up in our brain and in our memory and in our nervous system, as well as in our joints and things like that. So there's even, you know, government websites, health websites that are run by the government that have done experiments and have used groups of people to study these effects. And they see the effects on their nervous system, and they see the effects on their blood pressure, and so on and so forth, their ability to sleep better, and all these things that are extremely important for our brain health and for our mental health. So what happens is, when we are stimulated, what is stimulated first is the nervous system. So the story doesn't hit until after the body has, through the nervous system, through the energy body, been struck. And that is why the practice of being able to recognize an activation, a trigger from the neck down, is crucial to being able to actually find that space between stimulus and response. Because by the time the story hits, or by the time you start telling a story, it's too late almost. Your response is already colored by whatever amount of story you've begun to tell. And it happens all the time. I'm not able to really think of an exact example right now, but it'll be, you know, something as simple as, you know, my husband will assume that I did something, and then he'll build a story around that, and then he'll share it with me. Oh, did you so-and-so, and it turned out such-and-such. And I'll say, well, why do you think that? Like, you just made up a whole story about how everything went, but you really don't have any outside information. You didn't ask me if I did such-and-such and so-and-so. It's very vague, but you understand what I mean. We story tell all the time, but we story make all the time. We're great story makers. So the body and the nervous system are registering and responding to and receiving, and really it's responding to stimuli. It's constantly responding to your environment. Why? For survival, right? So your body senses a threat before you have a story about that threat, before you're able to like logically figure out why that is a threat. Because that takes a process of the brain that's not activated first. So yoga helps to move us away from fight, flight, freeze, or collapse, which is the nervous system that is for survival. It's when the people talk about like adrenal fatigue. So your adrenal glands sit on top of your kidneys. And from an energetic point of view, your kidneys represent fear. Your liver represents anger. This is on an energy body. So people talk about adrenal fatigue. You know, that's like a thing that everybody is experiencing apparently. That's because you can have an experience of a threat and it never really registered with the brain. You can consider that you are in a fine, comfortable situation. Maybe you're in a cozy room in your home, or you're with a good friend or whatever. But without, your nervous system can time travel to a time that's unsafe or to a time that's threatening, and you don't even have the awareness of that mentally. So why yoga? The yoga asanas are designed, the yoga postures, and you don't need to do 2-3 hours of them a day. You can do 20 minutes of yoga asana, are designed to not only help you to wring out or discharge the stuck stories that don't need to be there, but also the poses, the asanas, are designed to reunite you with the physical body. So the residue of the asana, so for instance, if I'm doing triangle pose, Uttita Trikonasana, when I come out of the pose, having done it on one side, I wait for a moment in Tadasana, mountain pose, to experience the residue of the pose. And I'm also able to compare it, if you will, to the other side that has not yet experienced triangle pose. So this information, this pause, this space in between the asana helps me to really unite body, mind, and spirit. And then at the end of the practice, we lie in Shavasana, which is a crucial yoga pose. And for those of you out there that are practicing yoga asana and leaving the class before taking Shavasana, or just staying, just being a teacher that gives 5 minutes to Shavasana, you are really doing yourself, and if you're a teacher, your students, a major disservice. Even if you are teaching a 60-minute class, which I'm old school, classes should be 90 minutes, so that you have philosophy, meditation, breath work, so that you build sangha and community, so that you move through a really nice sequence of asana, and then do some pranayama perhaps, and then the last 10 to 15 minutes of the class is Shavasana. I had a teacher once say to me, very wise teacher, but I disagreed, say to me, and this was when I was in my training, you don't need to keep your students in Shavasana for more than 5 minutes, 7 minutes maybe, definitely no longer than 10. Their nervous systems can't handle it. But this is what we know. We know that if somebody's nervous system can't handle Shavasana for 5 or 10 minutes, what we know is that if you keep someone or you yourself stay in Shavasana corpse pose for less than 10 minutes, you haven't even hit the sweet spot of being able to settle your nervous system. You actually need a good 12 to 15 minutes. So I'll get off of that. But in the Shavasana experience, your body is being able to, the channels have been cleared. The energy body has been cleared. So what does this all mean? I don't know. But what I think it means is we need to get more intimate with the stimulus, what that feels like in our bodies before we get all hopped up on, I'm in that space between stimulus and response, and I'm checking on my response, and I'm up in my head. What I think is we're meant to actually be able to recognize the stimulus before we start story making, before we get hit on the head. One of the ways to do that is to, well, through the yoga asana, it's very possible. Also walking out in nature. In other words, moments where you can be physical, but also intimate and silent so that you can hear the whispers of your body. And when you have that as a practice, then when you're out and about in your day, you will have this intimacy with your body that will then aid you in recognizing, oh, I just got that really weird stirring in the pit of my stomach. Or my heart is racing. What's happening here? So what I want for myself and for others is for us to become intimate enough with our body so that we recognize the stimulus before it hits our brain. That's how we're going to move into this vast space before the response. And the more we're able to do this, the more that becomes a habit. Oh, I'm feeling some flutterings in my stomach, or I just broke out in a sweat. I guess I could call it a hot flash, but I know for me personally, when I was experiencing hot flashes about 10 years ago, I would get a hot flash and it would be clammy, mostly on my arms. And I would then stop and go, what was I just thinking about? And when I recognized that my hot flashes were being brought on by anxious thoughts, I was able to control and manage my hot flashes. And knock on wood, I don't get them. I know a lot of us grow out of them and all that, but I think it has to do with a few things, your diet and alcohol and stuff like that. But for sure, and exercise is vital, yoga and walking and all of that, strength training. But if you're having a hot flash, stop for a moment and ask yourself, what am I nervous about? What was I just thinking about? Or maybe I wasn't thinking it, but I'm nervous about something. I'm anxious about something. I'm feeling threatened somewhere in my life. This also reminds me of the wonderful meditation teacher Tara Brach and her acronym RAIN, R-A-I-N, which stands for recognize, allow, investigate, and nurture. And briefly, this is talking about when we are triggered, being able to recognize that a trigger has occurred. And my whole talk with you in this episode has been, I cannot intellectualize the stimulus, the trigger, because it's too late by then. I want to be in relationship with my body in a way that I can read its signs. Just like if it's cold, I know I need a sweater. And if it's hot, I know I need a cold drink or whatever. Like, those are needs that the body has, and I'm able to recognize what it needs and ideally be able to fulfill those needs. Well, when your nervous system is activated by a trigger, by a stimulus, you need to be able to read those signs in your body first. This way, before we even decide on a response, we've gone from the sympathetic nervous system, which is fight, flight, freeze, fold, collapse, all the things, to parasympathetic nervous system, which is the rest and digest. That's when we can start talking about your vagus nerve, and we can start talking about naming things in the room, and we can start talking about our breath work or how we do wish to respond. Because remember, this quote doesn't say something like, between stimulus and response, there's in a space, and in that space, we learn to never respond. No, there's no emotional or spiritual growth in never responding. But there is growth in making sure that we respond from a place of clarity, from a place of experience, and from a place of what is real in the now and what is my vision for the future. So thank you for listening. And I hope you found this interesting. I just keep riffing on some stuff that's coming to my mind, and I appreciate anybody that shows up and allows my thoughts to take up some of their mind space. Hands together at the heart center. May all beings be happy and peaceful. May all beings be healthy and strong. May all beings be safe and protected. May all beings live with ease. Namaste.